Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Patty Framo here. Today is Monday, August the 6th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. And we hope that your Monday is off to the roaring start it really deserves to be. I mean, Patty, we've talked often, Tom and I often talk on Monday mornings about, you know, the bad rap that Monday gets. Oh, God, it's Monday. I don't want to have to deal with Monday again. Why can't it be the weekend? You know, all that kind of stuff. But we like to try to remind everybody, Monday is actually a good day if we choose to make it one. And that's really the most important part right there. So you and I were talking just before the podcast how just getting ready to do the podcast lifts us up. It lifts me up. I get really excited when I do that. So I try to use that whenever I'm getting lifted up on a Monday to say, by the way, Mondays are wonderful. And it helps.
Absolutely.
It helps.
Yeah. And I loved hearing that. What you guys, you were telling me what you guys were talking about this morning, releasing things. The new universe. That
right,
is
right.
Just such a freeing thing. I mean, when you really can do it and you really get to that point where you can let go of stuff and let the universe figure it out, it just feels so light.
It does. It takes some practice, I've found, because it's hard to let go at times. You know, we want to. It's not like we don't want to let go, but there's also the part of us that says, I'm not sure I dare to let go.
Right. It's the trust. I mean, do we really trust that the universe is fully going to take care of it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And is that stuff that we put in our vortex actually really there? I mean, even, you know, from time to time, I get doubtful about that. I'm sort of like, well, maybe this is all just made up in my head. But, you know, I'm telling you so many times, it's just shown up in my life where you're like, there is no way that this could have happened.
It reminds me of a line from the Harry Potter series. In the last book, last movie, in which he meets up with Albus Dumbledore, the headmaster of the school, in a dream, because Albus got killed in the previous book. And he meets him in a dream, and he's having a conversation with him. And at the end of the conversation, he says, one other thing, Professor, is this really happening? Are we really having this conversation, or is it all just inside my head? And Dumbledore says, well, of course it's all inside your head, but why on earth does that mean that it's not real?
Right. It's true.
It's true.
It's a really weird, blurred line between reality and what our thoughts are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, we were just saying about releasing things to the universe. I was saying that last night, I wanted to just relax because I'm in this work mode. And I had this whole list of things that I had to do. But I have a friend visiting from out of town, and I was like, I just want to relax and do nothing. So I wrote the stuff all out on the list and stuck it on my desk. And I was like, all right, universe, I am letting you take over. And there was something about that action, even whether or not it's all going to get done immediately, just doing that made me feel lighter. And I was like, all right, I gave it to, it's like I delegated it.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And when you can do it, when you can pull it off and really convince yourself, yes, I'm leaving it to the universe, I let go of it and so forth, it does produce some remarkable results in ways that we never even expect. I mean, I've been noticing it much more lately in terms of when Louise and I are like trying to get away for the weekend, just to get away from work and get away from all the craziness and so forth, which we did over the weekend. We went down to the shoreline, and while we're driving, I'm feeling better. I'm feeling good. You're like, oh, great. We're away. We're going to be having a nice lunch and all this other good stuff. And as that happened, I wasn't really saying I release everything to the universe. I didn't say that consciously, but I could feel it happening subconsciously. I could feel it happening sort of, you know, sotto voce, if you will. And what happened for the rest of the trip, both down and back, was traffic just moved out of my way. The entire
Don't
trip.
You love that?
It didn't matter which lane I was in. It would just clear in front of me. I said, whoa, we're in the flow today.
I love when that stuff happens.
Oh, yeah.
And the opposite. I mean, because I've been sometimes where I'm driving to work and I am in a grouchy mood. And I am telling you, I get every person, slow moving driver, right in front of me. It's just crazy how accurate it is. Like it just really works.
Oh, geez. I, you know, the funny thing is, I remember from the very beginning, and by the beginning, I mean when I first got exposed to the name, the law of attraction, the basic concepts, which I saw. I think we both had the same experience through watching the movie The Secret. Mm-hmm. And I remember afterward kind of trying to play with it and, you know, trying to trust it and so forth, and basically wondering and doubting at the same time. And yet, as things started to happen. I said, well, I would really like to have lots of evidence. You know, I want to work every time so I can start to believe in it. And what I've found since then is that it turns out, for me, all that evidence still doesn't convince me. Not completely. I mean, it's just amazing. I can say that I have had, I don't know what the count is, dozens, hundreds of things happen. You know, little things, big things, in between things that reinforce for me, yes, it's working, yes, it's working, yes, it's working. And I continue to doubt. And I say to myself, how many times does it have to work before I finally say, yes, yes, this works?
I can so relate to that. I can so relate to that because I have had a million different things. I mean, it's like crazy how many things have proven to me that this is absolutely reality. Mm. But there's every now and then this little doubt that comes in, but it's usually when I'm in a lower vibration.
Oh, yeah.
That happens.
I wouldn't say usually, I'd say always.
Always, yeah. I mean, I think that's true. So I'm feeling disconnected from my inner being, and that brings up those doubts because I'm not connected.
Exactly.
So you kind of look at the world at that point through gray-colored glasses and think, well, how could anything really help at this point?
But it's also disconcerting because I was hoping, well, once I got all this proof, then I wouldn't fall into that, you know, that muddy pool again. And yet I keep falling into the muddy pool anyway. It's like, my plan got destroyed.
Well, and it's funny, you're right, because on one hand, there's a part of me that thinks, well, shouldn't I just be able to just be happy all the time? Shouldn't I just, now that I understand this and I get this and I'm getting better and better at it, shouldn't I just be able to be happy and be in a high vibration 24 hours a day and have everything flow? And the bottom line is, as Abraham says, you know, a lot of our purpose here is to expand. And the way we expand is by experiencing contrast. And that contrast sets off those new desires that helps us expand. So it's kind of necessary.
I'm thinking that maybe I ought to get a t-shirt made, although as I think about it, most people wouldn't understand what it was about. But anyone who knew Abraham would know what it was about. Oh. The t-shirt would say, contrast happens.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And, right? And there's, yeah. And, but the thing is it has a useful purpose. And, you know, that's a lot of the things I've been learning when recently they're adding more steps. You know how initially they just had the 3 steps and now they've got 4 steps and now they've got 5 steps.
Yeah, right. So, 5 steps. Yeah. I heard about the last 2 steps. I said, what? They weren't done.
Exactly. They're like, no, it's because it's expanding. It's evolving, expanding. Yeah. And so those first 3 steps, you know, you ask and then the second step is the universe makes it all happen. So it's already hanging out there in your vortex waiting for you to figure it out and get it, let it in. And then the 3rd step is when you let it in by getting lined up with your inner being and also lined up and not doubting the thing that it is that you want to come in and resonating with those feelings like it's already happened. But then step 4 is when contrast happens and you understand. I think this was step 4, right?
Yeah, it sounds right. Happens,
understand why it's happening, but then step 5 is when you're actually fine with the contrast.
Right, yeah.
Because you're really getting that the reason it's happening is so that you can have that contrast, shoot off that new rocket of desire, and then have that stuff expand again.
Yeah, it's almost like 4 and 5 are wash, rinse, and repeat the first 3 steps. Just keep going and keep going and keep going.
It's like getting better. It's sort of like getting advanced and then intermediate and then advanced.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So welcome to your graduate level course, 689 in advanced deliberate creation.
And allowing.
Art of allowing. That's right.
Exactly.
Well, then the art of allowing, that's the lab.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So you know, we talked a little bit ahead of time about what topic to talk about today.
Yeah,
I had a couple friends over the weekend. I had a bunch of friends over Saturday night. We were talking about what might be some potential topics.
Mm-hmm. And you came up with a good one.
Yeah, it would be worthwhile. And my friend Kelly came up with this. It's dealing with difficult people.
Mm, yeah. It's not something we normally think about where law of attraction is concerned, because we usually think about it in terms of, well, what can I do for me? But the one exception, of course, to that rule is relationships. And it's the moment that you start talking about relationships, now you're talking about other people. And so now it's like, well, you know, it like the favorite metaphor I've been using lately, it's like there are a lot of people who want to use the law of attraction like a ray gun and shoot off their enemies. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, they're not my enemies anymore. They're doing exactly what I want them to do. I'm going to influence them to do exactly what I want them to do.
That's right.
Isn't that what that's about? That's, isn't that what the tool's like for? Work, right? Yeah, of course. It's got to work.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, the thing about dealing with difficult people, which I was realizing right before the podcast today is that obviously when I've got those difficult people in my life or I'm encountering them, it's there's a reason. And it's because there's some sort of contrast that I'm dealing with that is attracting them, because obviously I'm vibrating at that level at that time.
I have to say, the first time I realized that about myself, it really, really pissed me off. Like, what am I doing attracting these difficult people? I don't need this. Stop doing it.
Exactly. And then, of course, the more we push against it, by one of course, of the, side, the more we're going to attract it, because we're putting more energy towards it, and round and round we get.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's crazy.
I have a story I wanted to tell about this. Sure. Actually, it's funny. I came up with three stories where I've done this that it really stood out for me.
Okay.
Being crazy, as I was saying before, bizarrely effective.
Well, we love stories around here, so go right ahead.
So one was I had, but they're all work related. And I thought later, gosh, there's so many other instances and other types of relationships, but this is just what stood out for me. I had one boss years ago who was really, I mean, she had good intentions and she was trying to teach me and help me to grow in my position. Mm-hmm. But the way that she did it was by making me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of yelling at me and making me feel really incompetent and just like I was messing up all over the place. And it just made me feel horrible. I mean, it would like bring me to tears every single time.
The drill sergeant approach.
Exactly.
That's what that is. Yeah.
It's true. It's true. I know she had no awareness that this is how she was coming across, because I know that I really do believe she had good intentions, but it was not a good fit for me. And so I decided I needed to do something about it. It wasn't going to work the way that I was doing it. And the first thing I decided to do was to not answer the phone when she called. So that I could cut.
That works real well.
Well, because I just was so blown when she would do that every time. I knew it was coming, and yet it was just this shock, and I wouldn't even, all your brain power goes into that emotional center, and any thinking part is like out the window.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah.
So I wanted to be able to sort of think about what she said enough to be able to come up with a plan and set an intention and get really centered before I called her back. So that was kind of the first step that I did.
It's kind of interesting too, because as you're saying that, I'm realizing that's one of the reasons dealing with people like that is one of the reasons why email and text messages have become so popular. Because,
oh yeah.
Because you don't have to deal with, you don't have to have the direct force of it blowing in your face. Cut down a bit, because all the emotional angst is gone. All that there is words on a page.
Right. Exactly. It sort of makes you feel a little emotionally protected in some way.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Works well with exes too.
So, of course, it also has the flip side too. This is my complaint about emails and text messages is that, well, I mean, you can use emojis, but even there it gets a little bit crazy. You really can't read the emotional structure or the emotional mood or set point of the other person.
Except
where you're trying to infer through the words. And usually we get that part wrong.
Right. And it's really easy to have misinterpretations.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
Because there's not a tone to the voice.
There's no tone. There's no body language. There's none of the usual nonverbal signals that we rely upon when we're talking to somebody.
Mm-hmm. It's really true.
Yeah.
So my next step on this dealing with this boss was I decided to write out a vision of what she was like and what our relationship was like in the present tense, using feeling terms as if it had already happened and we were already there.
Nice.
And I did this whole thing on my boss is, I'm so relieved now that, and then went into this whole description of how I felt about her and how she had just softened her approach and I felt so much more safe and comfortable talking to her. I went on and on and on in this whole vision of how I really wanted it to feel. But by doing it in present tense, that's when it can really make it in my present and draw it to me.
Well, it was also a little bit daring, because that can work either way. It depends on how much you believe in it. If you do all that and you say all that, and deep down you're saying, this is never going to work, she's never going to react this way, all you're doing is reinforcing the other side of it. So you did well, because you were able to get the belief and the feeling into it at the same time. And that's what made it work great.
You're absolutely right. That is so key. That's a really big part. Because if I had been writing all this down and thinking in my head, oh, yeah, right, that's really going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Then it wouldn't have got me anywhere. But
well, it would have gotten you where you didn't want to be. It would have actually boomeranged on
you. Made it worse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. And so I did it when I had meditated and I was in a really good place. And, you know, I waited till I was in that positive place before getting specific in this way.
Which is what Abraham tells us to do. They tell us, get aligned first, get aligned first.
Yep. Get lined up and then get lined up and then. Exactly.
That's it. Yeah.
So what ultimately happened with this is things started really shifting with her, and or with us, I should say, because, it, you know, obviously she wasn't the only one. There were some little changes she made, but somehow it shifted for me. I ended up getting laid off from this job, which I'd never, you know, was this huge rift. They laid a bunch of people off. What was interesting about that was I was in such a good place that my response to the layoff was to say, you know what? It's fine. I'll figure something out. It was meant to be. There's something else, some other adventure I'm meant to go on to.
Yeah, that's good.
And I was just in a good, for some reason, I was just able to have a really good reaction to it. And so at the time they were kind of shuffling everybody who was getting laid off out the door, take your computer, you got to leave, you can't talk to anybody, because they didn't want some big negative downward spiral to happen. And I was the only one that they let go into my team and say goodbye to the team.
Oh, interesting.
What a good place I was in. And what was so fascinating about this goodbye session, it was like a love fest. And my boss ended up crying that I was leaving. I mean, it was so turned around. It was just so bizarrely effective.
That's really interesting. Not the result you expected, for sure.
No, not at all. It was totally different than what I expected. But have you had experiences with difficult people where you've tried things and had them turn around at all?
Oh, yeah. I've documented some of them here on the podcast. The one that comes to mind most recently was a situation we had with one of our employees last month that I talked about to some degree. And I didn't go into all the details about it because I wanted to keep a lot of it private. But the bottom line was that there was this big meeting that had to happen, and it was one that I was not looking forward to. And it was one where there were a lot of people who could have gotten kind of their noses bent out of joint. But instead, even as I was driving to the office, even as I was thinking about each individual person, I was just imagining them, you know, being in a great mood and being very receptive to the stuff I was saying and so forth. And when it came time for the meeting, it came off flawlessly. It just absolutely flawlessly. I was blown away at how well it went. And this was a meeting I was dreading. I was really dreading it. I could just see all kinds of ways it could just explode in my face. And it didn't, which was great.
Yeah, that is really cool. In fact, I was just thinking about this week. I had an incident where I've had some issues with my water heater, a slow leak, and the mold all over the garage walls and blah, blah, blah. So I had the guy coming in, and they've been working on redoing the walls and the water heater. And when they finished, I realized that they had discussed putting a box underneath it and drywalling it in, and it hadn't happened. Mm. And I had in my head, like, oh my gosh, this is a disaster. They're never going to pay for it. They're done the job. They're not going to want to come back, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't call them right away. I sent him a little text about it. And then once I got, I kind of tried to reframe it like, no, this is okay. We, you know, this is something that is reasonable for me to expect, and it's just going to happen, and it's going to happen flawlessly. And I got the guy on the phone, and he was so nice about it. He was like, you know, we just want you to be happy. So we're going to make you happy. So it's kind of cool when that turns around.
I remember about, I'm going to say maybe a year and a half ago, something like that, Joel and I did a podcast on this subject, and he told me the story about how he had to call a call center for, it was like an internet service provider or a telephone company or something like that. I don't remember which.
Those are always fun conversations.
Oh, they're always, they're a blast. They just make you feel so good inside. And this had been one of those ongoing things. Like, this is one of those nagging issues that just wouldn't go away, and he had to get it resolved, and it was driving him crazy, and every person he talked to behaved incompetently and all this kind of stuff. And it kind of peaked at one point where I think it was a Thursday, he basically just lost it. So he just couldn't handle it anymore. And of course, the phone conversation was a disaster. And what followed afterward was a disaster. And so he just spent like the next couple of days just ruffling, you know, smoothing his ruffled feathers and calming down and getting into a better headspace. And then that following Monday, he calls again, this time getting himself into alignment. this time getting himself into a positive space and believing, you know, somehow the universe is going to put me in touch with the right person who really just understands completely what's going on, and they're going to fix the whole thing, and it's all going to be so smooth. And you know, this issue that had been going on for weeks got resolved in less than an hour.
Oh, I love that.
The whole thing. And
I love that.
And the person he talked to just made it as easy peasy as could be. And you know, everything worked out exactly the way she said it would. And the billing issue got resolved. And I mean, all of it got just ironed out immediately. All because he just changed his attitude around. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny because I, even in my meetup, a lot of times I'll hear people say things like, you can't just change, you know, when they're feeling in a bad space and frustrated, you can't just change your attitude and everything's going to magically change. But the thing is there's steps that are involved. There's kind of little specific tweaks that we can do that make that more likely to happen.
Hmm.
Like, for example, rather than just saying, you know, I'm all for affirmations if they're helpful to people, if they make you feel good.
Oh, yeah.
But I really don't feel like it's very effective to just say affirmations like, oh, I'm going to feel better and I feel better, as opposed to really getting into that feeling. I mean, that to me is the big difference, is he got into the feeling like I'm already there and it's already happened. It's a big difference than just saying it's going to happen and it's going to be this magical thing. It takes a little bit of tweaking
to make it
more, yeah, getting into that.
The one thing I can say for just saying them without having the feeling is if you're in a place in your life where you're kind of down in the dumps and you're having trouble climbing out and you're having trouble getting enthusiastic about anything, in that circumstance, just saying this positive thing can be enough to help break the old pattern up a little bit. It doesn't it doesn't necessarily give you the good feeling yet, but it's like what Abraham talks about. You climb up from depression to rage. You're a little bit better. Not a whole lot, exactly. But you're a little bit better.
Exactly. Like that emotional scale and asking it is given.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It's reaching for that next better feeling thought, and that next better feeling on the emotional scale. We can't go from despair to joy in 2 seconds. It's just not going to happen.
Not usually.
Because we've got the momentum going in the other direction.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We forget about that momentum, but you're right.
Right. And so I agree with you that the idea of doing an affirmation, if it makes you feel a little bit better, then go for it.
Yes.
Anything going to make you feel that little step better.
Oh, yeah. No matter what it is, if it doesn't matter how dumb it is, it doesn't matter what other people poo-poo, if it makes you feel better, it makes you feel better. And that's the bottom line.
Right. And I think the piece that I was thinking about is how some I've heard people say, you know, gosh, I write down every morning and read it 20 times a day. I'm going to blah, blah, blah. And they have like a list of affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
But without getting into the feeling piece, or at least making that next step, it starts to feel like an empty affirmation for some people.
Well, I think it does. And I think there's a real good reason why it feels empty. I mean, you're right that it's important to feel the feel-good part. But I think the reason it feels empty is because without realizing it, we're still feeling the bad part. So we really are feeling something, but we're just kind of masking it, saying, well, I'm not really feeling anything at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's the next step, which you're getting towards believing it.
Yeah.
Because if you're thinking it and saying it and writing it and repeating it and you're not believing it, it's just going to sit you in this spin of, you know, like the two ends of the stick where you're believing it or not believing it. It's just going to make you stuck in that middle space.
Well, I used to be really confused about the non-feeling part. Because I back in you know, 2007, November of 2007, when I first watched The Secret, it was normal for me to be in a space where I felt nothing, or I thought I felt nothing. And indeed, I thought that was normal. That's the way it always was. And because for me, it always was. What I didn't realize, though, is that, and if you look at the scale that Abraham provides, you know, they put their words in order from lowest vibration to highest vibration. And that middle area is usually like, you know, boredom or maybe contentment or, you know, slightly dissatisfied. I don't remember
overwhelmed,
what the exact words
are. And then up to hopeless, yeah. Hopeful.
But right in that boredom range, that's the range where you don't really feel anything theoretically. Mm. And what I learned over time was that I actually am feeling in that place. And I really believe everyone is feeling, even when they don't think they're feeling. And I know that sounds weird. It sounds really strange to say because, well, I'm not feeling anything. Yeah, you actually are. What you're feeling is low level vibration. And so it doesn't feel
like much.
Which
is kind of numb. It's almost numb.
It's a numbing feeling, but you're actually feeling something. And even worse than that, it's a negative. It's not neutral. We like to think that it's neutral. Right. It's not actually neutral. And the way I like to explain that is to equate it to what happens in a legislature. Because in a legislature, for a vote on a bill, you can vote aye, yes, you can vote no, or you can abstain or be not present. And it turns out that all the abstentions and not present votes count with the no's.
Because oh, wow.
The reason is that in majority rules, you have to have a majority of yeses plus one, right? So if you have 100 senators, then you have to have at least 50, which is half of that would be a majority, half, plus one. If you have 50% plus one, you have a majority, 50% plus one saying yes. That means everything else is not a yes. And therefore, everything else is actually a no. When you look at it that way, and you look at a feeling and emotion that way, and you say, well, it's a neutral emotion. Actually, it's not. It's not a positive emotion. It's not positive. Therefore, it falls in the negative category.
That's a great analogy. And I was just thinking, too, is, you know, you're right, because that neutral place of feeling nothing is really not our natural state.
No, it's not.
You hear Abraham talk, our natural state is well-being.
Yeah, that's true.
Where you have an overall sense of satisfaction and well-being.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
As opposed to just sort of numb or bored. Yeah. So you want to hear my next story about
sure,
the difficult person?
So tell us
this
about
was
it.
An interesting. This is an old boss from way back when.
Okay.
And I had one boss that was a really good friend of mine, and he got moved up to corporate because he was such a great boss. We got along really well. Mm-hmm. And a new boss came in, and she, I don't know if she was threatened by me or whatever, but it was one of those things where, you know how when you meet somebody and you know, like, oil and water, right?
Yeah,
from the start?
Yeah, right.
So she, over time, stopped giving me assignments to do and kind of isolated me. So the writing was on the wall. I was like, all right, well, this is coming to an end. And and it was actually at a time when I was ready to kind of move on anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
But I started focusing a little bit more on what was next for me. Like, what would I want next? And I decided at that point, my kids were little, I just had one daughter at that time. And I decided to open up a kids' resale store. It just sounded like a really fun thing for me to do. So for the next 3 months, when she was not giving me anything to do, I just sat there in that office and worked on putting my whole business together. I wrote a business plan. I did market research. I mean, the whole thing. I found the place. I started buying stuff. It was like the perfect opportunity to get paid while thinking of this next thing. I mean, I kept saying to her, is there anything you want me to do? Oh, no, you know, she wouldn't give me anything. So I was like, all right, well, it's kind of like making, you know, lemonade out of lemons.
Right, right.
And I did that for 3 months. I got laid off. I opened the store and had the store for the next 7 years.
Wow.
But it was a great opportunity for me to make that, take, you know, that situation where she was, you know, kind of squashing me down and focused on what was coming, focusing on my vision.
You know, as you're telling that story, it occurred to me that I had an experience dealing with a difficult person and doing the same thing you just did, looking forward to where I wanted it to be. And it was about 10 to 15 years before I heard about the law of attraction. So I was flying blind for sure.
Mm-hmm.
This was a company. Now, this is back in the day. Today, of course, if you go to a printer, like to, you know, your local Staples, and they print a color document for you, you know, they aren't having to do all the prep work that they used to do. It used to be before the digital era that there was a whole bunch of stuff you would have to do in order to make a digital print. And there was like what they called four color separation, and there were plates to be made.
I remember
and
that. Yeah.
There was all this stuff you had to do. Well, I was working at a company that did what they call prepress, which basically amounts to setting up a document and making it ready to print to film four color separations. And that's all this company did. That was our main deal. And I was managing the production department for this company. Well, the person I worked for is the person who definitely qualifies as the difficult person. he didn't appear that way at first. In the interview, he seemed very reasonable and you know, well, soft-spoken and you know, very intelligent and all that kind of stuff. It seemed like a good guy to work for. After I got there, I found out that he was crazy. There's no other way to put it. He made these crazy decisions. One of the crazy decisions he made, the kind of printer that you would use when you printed this stuff, because you were printing film, you weren't actually printing paper. You know, you were printing to these large sheets of film. They were like black and white negatives is what they looked like. And you would hand those off to the printer and they would run it through a process that would prepare it for the press and they put it on the press and print the stuff out. Well, these machines were pretty good sized machines. I mean, they stood like, you know, they were the size of like an old style copier that, you know, you stood on the floor and stood like 5 feet tall and like 3 feet wide. It was that kind of a thing sort of. And the machines would, you know, you wanted to make sure that you were printing to film that was the appropriate size for what most printers wanted because that would help keep your costs under control. Well, this guy got the idea, well, I'm going to buy this printer that does four up on a large piece of film. And that way we can print stuff so much faster. You have to understand, this particular printer that he wanted us to use was designed for like newspapers that were ganging together huge amounts of pages to print. That's what this thing was designed for. He wanted to use it for four color separations for somebody who wanted to make a brochure for a real estate agency.
Which doesn't sound very logical.
Well, he was thinking you just gang them all up. You run them all at the same time. And if you had enough jobs coming through, you could conceivably do that and you might save about 10 to 20% on your cost. But if you don't have all those jobs, or if you have one job that comes out with a mistake, now all of a sudden your 10 to 20% savings just turned into about a 50% loss.
Wow.
So yeah. It was a really bad decision he made. And he made a number of decisions like that. Well, after a time working for this guy, and on top of that, you know, I'm managing the production department. So I'm putting in ridiculous hours trying to cover all the mistakes that were generated as a result of what he had put into place for me to work with. I was getting really burned out. And I mean, literally burned out. I finally reached the point where I said, I desperately need to get out of here. Please, God, get me out of here. I need to get out of here. I need to go find a better job. I need to get sleep. I need my crew to get out of here. They need sleep. And I knew in my gut that there was no way this company could survive because I knew how many jobs were coming through. I knew pretty much what we charged for them. And I'm good at math. I could kind of do the calculation. I said to myself, they are going through money like it's going out of style.
Yeah, the writing was on the wall.
The writing was on the wall. And I even estimated, I said, this was, in fact, it was that Christmas Eve, my staff and I had to work a 24-hour shift to get a last-minute job out because of a screw-up that the boss had made, that the owner of the company had made. And we were all burned out because of that. Well, we had a Christmas party, you know, shortly thereafter. We're all kind of bleary-eyed. And he's praising us to the rafters for having done this. And I'm looking at him like, you are out of your fucking mind. Excuse me for saying that so bluntly, but that's the way it came to me. And you have got to be kidding me. Well, January, I was like totally toast. I mean, I just couldn't handle it anymore. And that's when I put out to the universe. I thought I was putting out to God. I said, hey, you know, I need help. I need out of here. Do you know, within about a week or two of that request, this guy's top competitor in a town about 30 miles away, a guy who knew him, they would often get together for lunch, came into the company one day. And I said, oh, hey, Brad, how you doing? Now, Mike's not here. He says, oh, no, that's all right. I came here to see you. I said, why? He says, well, I want you to come work for me.
Wow.
I said, doing what? He says, I want you to run my second shift. So what hours would those be? It'd be like 4 p.m. to 11 p.m. or 4 p.m. to midnight, which was a little bit later than I really wanted. But hell, anything to get out of this place.
Yeah, no kidding.
I said, so how much are you going to pay me? Well, he was going to pay me about 30% more than Mike was paying me. I said, okay, nice. You got it. Let's go.
Yeah, and you know, your desire was strong.
Yeah. It was
really,
real strong.
Really, really wanted out of there.
Oh, so desperately. And and the best part was, as soon as I knew I was leaving, I called a meeting of my team and told them what I thought was happening with the company, gave them my reasons. I said, honestly, guys, I don't see this company being open more than 6 more months. I just don't see how they could manage the cash flow any longer than that. And it turned out I was off by 1 month. They closed in 5.
Wow.
The only sad part was two of my team, one guy was a an African-American guy, really, really nice guy, who I just hired. He had been unemployed for so long that he couldn't leave. He couldn't bring himself to leave because he needed the money so desperately.
Yeah,
I felt so bad for him. But I also knew that he was incredibly grateful for me having given him the job. Nobody was willing to hire him. And wow. I don't know why. He was actually a very good worker. It didn't make any sense to me. But nevertheless, he ended up staying. And there was two other people who ended up staying too. And the others were pretty much gone by the time they closed the doors. In fact, that one guy I was just telling you about, the day I left, he asked me to come home to meet his family. And I've told this story before. This was... I was not ready for this at all. He lived with his girlfriend and their 13 children in a 3-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
No, I'm sorry. It was a 2-bedroom apartment.
Oh, my gosh. So they were sleeping on the floor.
They were stacked. They were just stacked in.
And like every square inch.
Every square inch was filled. And all he and his girlfriend could do was tell me how grateful they were for me.
Aww.
And I mean, I could hardly speak. That's how blown away I was.
Wow.
I mean, because on the one hand, I knew I'd helped this guy who was trying desperately to feed 15 mouths. And I knew he couldn't do it on the paycheck that I was giving him. But on the other hand, I also knew that the paycheck I was giving him was a whole lot better than what he would have had otherwise. You know,
which is better than nothing.
Yeah. Oh, it was so much better. The gratitude, Patty, the gratitude was the part that absolutely blew me away.
Oh.
These people were in a really, really rough spot, but they were so high. They were in such a positive place.
And so it was all because of gratitude. I'm really curious to see where that got him.
I wish I could tell you.
Appreciative.
I never heard from him again. I don't know. I would love to know because I agree with you. Based on what I know now, I would love to know what happened with him. His name was Nathan. He was just a really nice guy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if Nathan, if by chance you happen to be listening to the podcast, let me know where you are. Because I haven't talked to him since the mid-90s. Wouldn't that be great? Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, that's something we were talking about ahead of time right before the podcast. As you said, you want to hear from him. It would be really cool to get some people calling.
It would be. Yeah, that'd be really something. But, oh, that was just, now I'm doubting myself. Was his name Nathan? I think it was Nathan. Now I'm not sure. I mean, it was 20 plus years ago.
So your choice of dealing with that situation, with that difficult person, was to leave, which at that point was probably the path of least resistance for you.
Oh, it clearly was. Because anything that involved staying there would have had massive amounts of resistance involved.
Yeah.
There was no way out that I could.
So that's the thing that is interesting is I wonder how many different ways there are that we could use law of attraction to deal with difficult people.
Law of attraction happens in so many different ways. I mean,
it does.
To give you another example from the same story, Michael's wife, Cindy, also worked at the company. She was a sales rep. And I became concerned for her and her kids when I saw what was happening with the company. Because I could just see the whole thing going under. I knew that's where it was headed. And I didn't know what to do because it's his wife, right? But I finally decided, you know, I wouldn't feel good in myself if I didn't say something. So I asked her for a meeting and told her, look, I don't want to create problems or anything like that, but I feel like you really need to know what's going on. And I just laid out everything that I knew for her. And she was grateful and She appreciated everything I told her. I could tell that I opened her eyes on a few things. And then she proceeded to tell everything to her husband.
Oh.
I'm thinking, you know, no, don't do that.
Oh, man.
And it actually worked out well for me because as soon as he heard that, he sent me out the door as soon as humanly possible. And that was perfect because that I mean I just got a quick pay raise instead of having to wait for my usual time. You know, I just gave my notice. You know? Nope, I was gone and I was over at Brad's the next day. So I didn't miss a beat. But it was a great example of how the law of attraction works in any way. Like here's this woman, Cindy, who was basically not in a good place. And I don't know what all the what was going on between her and Mike, but I'm sure that there was stuff going on that she felt like she had to tell him, even though doing so was probably not in her best interest. But she did anyway. That's a law of attraction thing from my perspective. She was attracting what she was attracting, and that's all there was to it. And you know, I could want something different for her, but I couldn't make her want something different.
No.
She had to be in that alignment, and she wasn't. So, you know, that to me is like the dividing line. You can help influence somebody else. You can influence them for the better, but they also have to be willing to be at that same place. If you're putting out good vibes and they're not ready to receive good vibes, it won't help. If you're putting out bad vibes, that won't help. You both have to be, they have to be receptive to it, and you have to be putting out the good stuff. And if you do that, then you can help. Then your energy actually helps reinforce whatever it is they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And that to me is the big thing to remember, that we can influence with their participation, but we can't control them.
Right. Right. It's true. It's funny because that was actually a topic that one of the questions that got brought up at the meetup this weekend was,
oh, really?
was about how you can, like when you're in a relationship with somebody, how much you can influence or not influence them. And how much it's your job to understand them.
Right.
Versus, you know, the idea of being selfish came up. And the guy who was speaking was saying, you know, when you're, he was not comfortable with being selfish or being self-centered. And thought that it was really important for him to, with his wife who had passed away, for him to include her thoughts and feelings in whatever he was doing and whatever he was thinking and in their relationship.
Yeah.
And he felt that to just think of himself was selfish.
Oh.
But the funny thing is, you know, when you hear Abraham talk, really everything is selfish.
It is. It has
everything,
to be.
Everything is from our own perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it truly is impossible to be selfless.
Right. It is.
Which is a hard thing to hear for many people. But truly, you can't, even when you're being selfless, you're being selfish. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
Okay, talk about that. What do you mean by that?
Well, let's say that you, let's say you're a person who runs a charity, or maybe you're a donor to a charity or something like that, or you get heavily involved in charitable activities, and you're doing it just for the people that you're trying to help, okay? Now, that sounds like a selfless act, doesn't it? And yet, as it turns out, when you look closer, the same person who's saying that they want to help somebody else is doing so because it feels good.
Right.
And that makes it selfish. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a good way. It is a good thing to be selfish that way. But the truth of the matter is you're not doing it out of indifference. You're doing it because it matters to you, and you're hoping that it's going to produce a positive result. And that's really where you get your jollies from the positive result. So to me, that's an act of selfishness.
I think selfishness has a bad rap.
Oh, it does. It does. Well, it's considered a pejorative. It's considered to be like, there's something wrong with you if you're selfish. But truly, what selfish really means, if you look at the root of it, it's interested in self. There's nothing actually wrong with that. What they're really complaining about is, well, you're not paying enough attention to me.
Right. Exactly. That, and also, you know, I think the idea of selfishness getting a bad rap sometimes can have something to do with when somebody's selfish and it hurts by hurting somebody else in some way, as opposed to being selfish to make themselves happy. They're actually doing something negative towards that other person by being selfish. So it ends up looking negative. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Give us an example.
So let's see. I was thinking about, like somebody who's maybe called narcissistic, for example.
Okay.
Who is thinking of their own needs at the detriment of the person around them. In other words, thinking of their own needs, and if it hurts the other person, having no consideration of that piece.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Versus having consideration of that, but also thinking of your needs first.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that makes sense, but
I think it does make sense. The question is, where does selfish fit into it? Because we kind of assume that that automatically is selfish. That's the pejorative side of it, right?
Right.
But
And it's almost really self-acceptance and self-love and thinking of your own needs first. So kind of like the old oxygen on the airplane thing, where you have to take care of your own needs first, obviously, before you can, like if you let yourself run out of oxygen, you can't help your kid sitting next to you. So you absolutely have to take care of your needs first in order to be able to even help anybody else.
Well, that's a very generous way to look at it. I think there are definitely people who really don't care about what their own actions do to those other people. They just have no concern. It's there's no boundary there for for those people. There's
So
no.
I wonder where Abraham weighs in on that.
I don't know, but I can tell you where I would weigh in. Where I would weigh in is that is not what I would call a healthy selfish act. It's not an act, of somebody who is they think they're acting on behalf of what their own interests are, what their own needs are, what their own desires are. And yet they end up producing results very, very often, I would say close to 100% of the time, that are not the results they had in mind. Those results do not encourage them in their own minds to change their pattern. So they keep repeating the pattern behavior. And that's why we call people like that narcissistic. They're constantly reinforcing the same behavior pattern over and over and over again. But the interesting thing about narcissists is that they, on some level, they may have their win, but they're never satisfied. It never feels good. It always feels ugh,
Empty. There's not
empty.
that true
And then they got to
happiness
go for the
inside.
next one because it's like the addict. Well, they didn't get it quite enough of the narcotic to feel better, so they have to go for more narcotic. And they have to keep going for more and more because it's never enough. So I
It's like
have to
filling
ask,
the bottomless pit.
how selfish is that? That sounds to me more like addiction than selfishness.
Or it's just an emptiness, like a lack of self-love.
Oh, definitely. That's involved in a big way. Yeah, but I just look at the result that they get. I mean, to me, if you're truly acting for self, you're not satisfied with, getting partway there. You want to get all the way there, whatever the there is, right? Assuming that there's a there in terms of modern terminology. But if there's a there, you want that there. You want that essence, that thing to be very, very satisfying to you. And I think that's what a healthy individual is able to do. A healthy mind, a healthy spirit is able to do that with relative ease. The person who is constantly trying to get to that place while hurting others, or maybe even by hurting others, they're never getting there. So they may be trying to behave in a selfish way, but they're doing a bad job of it. They're really not succeeding at all.
Well, and then there's the opposite of that, which are people who are very selfless. And that can be a detriment
Oh,
when you're
definitely.
always being the one who's the giver or doing for the other person and taking care of their
Oh,
needs,
absolutely.
and yet your needs aren't getting taken care of. That's not going to make you happy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's
So
definitely
either
true.
extreme.
Yeah, it really comes down to being healthy first. If you're healthy first, then it makes sense to talk about selfish until you, at least from my perspective, until you're talking about a healthy person, I don't think selfish really works as a concept. I mean, it works as a pejorative, I suppose, but if you really use the root concept of what selfish really means without the negative stereotype associated with it, it doesn't work with an unhealthy person. It just doesn't work at all. And the reason
And
is they're unhealthy.
then is healthy or unhealthy, aligned or unaligned?
Oh, unhealthy is definitely out of alignment.
So I'm just wondering, when we talk about the word of someone being healthy, is that really a synonym for aligned?
It's a good point. And I think it probably is. Because certainly somebody who is in some way unhealthy where relationships are concerned is a person who doesn't feel happy all the time.
Well, definitely out of alignment at those times.
So, I mean, there's certainly a strong correlation that they're out of alignment and they're unhealthy. The correlation is near 100%. Now, correlation is not causation, but in this case, I might be willing to make an exception.
And then it's interesting looking at the whole piece of why are we even attracting people who in our lives who are like that?
Well, that's a great question. That's a really good question.
And then there's probably something that we're not lined up with in our own self in order to vibrate at that level.
And I think the answer probably in some way ties to the fact that we are not at all times in alignment.
Right.
You know, what is it? Abraham says that all of our diseases are really just the responses long term to a prolonged series of out of alignment thoughts.
Right. Like when she talks about how, or they, I should say, talk about how when we have really strong desires and mm-hmm. we're not lining up with them or catching up with them, that's when we have the diseases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have these really strong desires, but we're just not allowing them in.
Which seems strange sometimes.
Over and over. Yeah.
Because I mean, I can think of somebody that Louise and I know who is generally a very positive person, and yet he's dealing with a dread disease right now.
So then I would wonder, what are some desires that he has that he's not catching up with?
Yeah, yeah. The conclusion that I came to a long time ago is I try to, well, first of all, the lead up to the conclusion is I try to understand why it is that somebody who seemingly has a certain mindset gets a certain result. And then I finally came to the conclusion that I don't really know what goes on in their heads.
Right.
I don't actually know what goes on in anyone else's head.
Right.
I'm having enough trouble figuring out what's going on in my head, let alone somebody else's.
Exactly. Well, and it's kind of like even in a family, like you'll see a couple getting divorced and you're like, God, they look so happy.
Yeah.
I'm so shocked that they're getting divorced, but nobody knows what's really going on in a relationship or in a family or in a brain or in anything unless you're there.
Unless it's you.
You're the one going through it.
Right.
And even if you're in the family, you're not necessarily looking from their perspective.
That's right.
You know, kind of like two kids who grow up in the same family, but look back and feel like they have completely different upbringings.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like there
are going to be no overlaps. There will be. I mean, that's what twin studies are all about, right? Twins who are separated at birth and they find that there are so many things that they have in common. And yet, despite all those commonalities, they also have differences. We get all excited about the fact they have the commonalities, despite the fact they were raised by two different sets of parents. But I think the more interesting thing is all the dissimilarities, all the things that are different. Because
given the fact that they've got this identical DNA.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it actually works both ways. In my view, it does. The wonder of it. It's wonderful and wondering. And I wonder about the fact that they have so many things that are alike and that there are so many things that are not alike. Both ways. Mm. Yeah.
And it's interesting, too, when I was thinking about people being in those relationships where one is more selfish or one is afraid to be selfish and one's more of a giver and those types of things. Mm-hmm. Really, the bottom line is, you know, it can turn, put our, you know, tie our brains into a little knot trying to figure all that stuff out.
Oh, yes.
But in reality, we really don't need to. I mean, the bottom line is if we can just get lined up with what we want. Everything else, the universe just figures out. That's what's so crazy.
Yeah.
Is it just figures it all out and does it. It's not having to do the how piece.
And that's the part that we're still learning, that we're all trying to learn how to do on a regular basis.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, knowing perfectly well that if we do, everything works out great. But we have that little bit of doubt that just we keep hanging on to. And so we keep holding back. No, I'm not going to do it this time. No, maybe I'll do it tomorrow.
And, you know, the thing is, maybe it doesn't turn out great right away, but it's a step towards something that you really want. But we don't even know. Like, that's the other thing, too, is a lot of times you've got situations where you have contrast and you line up with something and you get to that next step. And that next step may not be absolutely everything that you were hoping for, but sometimes that step is leading. The universe has figured it out how to have that next step lead towards what your bottom line desire really is.
True. Yeah.
And we don't always know when that's happening or how it's going to happen, but it doesn't really matter. It's getting back to that trust issue we were talking about in the beginning.
I think there's also another factor too. Because we can be in a place of knowing how, if we let go, the path of least resistance gets followed and we get to the result smoothest and quickest and so forth. But there's also a piece of us that knows that for this particular situation X, the path of least resistance doesn't have a whole lot of least resistance to it. There's a lot of resistance in the way, which means that, yeah, the universe will find its way through that, but there could be some bumps and bruises along the way.
Yes.
And maybe we don't want to have to deal with those bumps and bruises.
Right. Well, and if we want, we can then put out that desire that we want it to be a smoother path.
That's true. That's where we're asking the universe simultaneously to take stuff out of the path. Like, I release that one. Yep. Get rid of that boulder. I release that one too. Yeah. That one over there. Yeah. Get rid of that. I'm fine. Exactly. I don't want that one either.
Exactly. I mean, I had this other coworker that was a really tough one to work with at one point. Loved to stir the pot, real angry kind of person, create a lot of drama. And I was planning on leaving the job because I was like, my path of least resistance is to get out of here because I didn't want to be around her anymore.
Yeah,
I started focusing on the positive aspects of that job on the way to work. I would start thinking, okay, I like this part about it and I like that part about it. And I really, really try not to think about her, just focus on the positive aspects of the job. Mm-hmm. And guess what? She got fired.
Oh, really?
And that was the end of that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the universe took care of it.
There it is.
I didn't have to do a thing, but I really do believe that me taking that little step to focus on those positive aspects is what allowed that to kind of all work out that way.
And it's good that you believe that, because that's the kind of thing it would be very easy for us to skip over. And you didn't.
Right. Right. Well, it was so painful experiencing that every day that I was like, I got to figure something out. Oh, maybe I'll try law of attraction.
Ah.
You know, it's like you forget.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait a minute, I've got all these tools at my disposal. I need to just use them.
It's like we're trying to develop a new habit, but this is a really big habit. This is a life habit. It's shifting an entire lifetime's behavior pattern away from what we are recognizing more and more in our own lives are fairly destructive patterns that keep setting ourselves up for failure of one kind or another, and trying to replace it with this new pattern, which we have been promised, and which on some level we believe will actually turn things around, make things better, get us into a better place, have better results, and so forth. It takes time to reserve, like you said before, there's a lot of negative momentum going the other way. It takes time to reverse that momentum.
It's work in progress every step of the way. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's really, I think, a lot of what coaching is about, is helping somebody on a frequent, weekly, biweekly, whatever basis to work on, to remind them, here's these tools here. Don't forget to use them, because it's so amazing how when we're in pain, we're right up against what that pain is and you can't even see beyond it.
Yes.
And to have somebody go, well, remember, you've got this tool you could try. You've got this. It's like, oh yeah. Because when you're down in the pits of despair, you don't even remember that.
That's true. Yeah. When you're in that bad place, you can't even remember how the rules of the game are played.
It's just, right.
All you feel is the despair and the depression and the angst and the frustration and all that stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's so true. You're right. That's a good time to have a coach. Actually, why don't we take a moment to do a little promo for you? Because you're a very skilled coach. I've talked to you for like just two shows. I can tell you're good at it. So if somebody wants to reach out to you, how do they reach out to you if they want to get a little assistance?
Well, I would say the best place right now, since I'm still working on my website, is email me at Patty Framo, or Patty at PattyFramoCoaching.com. And it's PATTY at Patty Framo, FRAMO Coaching.com. Patty Framo Coaching.
That's good. That's really good. I also want to take a moment, because we try to do this every show, to remind people who are not yet regular listeners that you can become a regular listener pretty easily without having to remember when all the podcasts are, because you can have all of our episodes sent directly to your smartphone or to tablet or whatever device you use to listen in. And it's really easy to do. You just go to the homepage, loatoday.net is the address. And on that homepage, you'll see at the top, you'll see the broadcast player if you want to listen to us live. We love that. Below that is the instructions of how to connect to us. We love that too when you do that. And below that are instructions on how to subscribe. It takes about a minute. It's free. And it is quite probably the best thing you'll ever do, because you'll get well over 40 episodes every month to listen to, well over 40 hours. And I got to tell you, Patty, people listen. We know on average, every single podcast that is played on average gets played 90% of the way through. I mean, clearly, they're listening all the way through in most cases.
Yeah. So it's pretty. And a lot of them are so listenable. You have a great voice and really good attitude. So it's really fun to listen to.
Well, I also have 7 life coaches to work with. That helps a little bit too.
Exactly. Can't hurt.
It doesn't hurt. It helps an awful lot. Helps me, I know. But that's what keeps me going. So anyway, look forward to talking to you next week.
Sounds great. You too.
And we hope that you'll come back next time and join us next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.